Good evening and welcome to Good News Updates from Living Compassion. It's my privilege to be joined tonight by Bob from Living Compassion. Welcome, Bob.
Hi, Michael.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
Great. Great. Bob, you are intimately involved with the technology infrastructure for Living Compassion.
That's right.
And I'm wondering if you can share with us a little bit about how some of these new technologies, I've heard a lot about Skype for the upcoming Palo Alto workshop, how that and some of the other new internet technologies are really helping to make practice available to people anywhere.
Sure. There's going to be a workshop with Sherry on March 21st in Palo Alto, California. And normally that would just be available to anyone who's essentially in Northern California. But, you know, we're doing a first-time test, and we're inviting anyone who wants to participate in it who can use their computer with an application called Skype to be part of that workshop.
Yeah, that'll be really great. It's fun for me to be there. I live physically close to there, so it's fun for me to be there present in the workshop and know that people are participating from all around the world.
Yeah, and you know, Skype, for anyone who doesn't know what it is, there's this, this application that you kind of download like a lot of different things from the internet. And if you have a headset with your computer and like a broadband connection like DSL or cable internet, you can make a call from like one location to another and not incur any costs. And so we recently did this with a Living Compassion board member where we had some board members who don't live in California, and they basically joined an eight-hour call, participated as fully as they would if they were there in person, and it cost nothing. And so, the thing about this that's really exciting for me, because I was, knowing that I was going to be on a call today, I've been sort of thinking about it and noodling about sort of like what about this was important to me is that, there is a piece of, making practice available to anyone, no matter where they are, no matter where we are. And then the step that's really important to me personally is being able to provide practice support. And so, like, if I go to the monastery, there's every bit of support. The whole monastery is set up to support me doing my practice. And I also know personally that once I leave the monastery, it's a lot harder to access that support because there isn't a schedule that the monastery is providing for me, and there isn't, guidance and all the things that come with being at the monastery on retreat. So the exciting thing about me with things like Skype is that we're able to bring practice support to people in their everyday lives.
Yeah, I think you've really hit the nail on the head. Yes, when we're at the monastery, there's that structure there that really supports us in being present and coming back to our heart. And I have a similar experience. When I'm not there, it's harder for me to access that. And it seems like what you're pointing at is that with these new technologies, essentially we're bringing that practice support to anyone wherever they are in the world.
That's right. And, the piece that's become, much more present for, I think, for a lot of people, maybe most people these days, is that, with the economic situation the way it is, that it's just everything is more, even if things aren't more expensive, it's harder to pay for them. And so the idea of, like, people, it's one thing for me who lives in California to get to the monastery, but if I'm in Pittsburgh or Texas or Germany, it just gets that much harder. And while still, that is really the core of where, a lot of the practice happens and where the practice lives, that we're able to make it easier for people to participate where they are and provide all the support that they're willing to accept from where we are.
Yes, yes, yes. It's just fascinating. And for me, I'm not sure if you have this experience, but for me, even now, before these Skype workshops, there's almost as much online practice as I can find the time and willingness to access. And for me, a big part of that is listening to the archives, and there's also, as you know, email classes and other kinds of support that are really available over the internet.
Right. And so all the technology that's sort of become available in the past 5 or 10 years has made it possible for us to do things with actually, you know, while there's sort of like people time attended to, but the cost, you know, is not exorbitant. And so we're able to like offer all the open air archives so that people can listen. We're able to, you know, do like these conference calls we've been doing over the new direction, so that anyone, no matter where they are, can call into them and be in the same kind of conversation that we're at when we're in group. And so, you know, and that's the other part of me that's really exciting is about technology and the practice is that it always comes from the place of practice. And so anyone who's been at the monastery or been on retreat has heard, you know, the idea of the privileged environment. And, the thing that is really exciting to me is that we've been able to use technology as a tool and kept that privileged environment for everyone to be able to do their practice in the way that is most helpful.
Yes, yes. So it's really technology at the service of practice rather than the other way around.
Right, right. And so, you know, I mean, we use the very basic technology, just like the telephone, right,
yes.
for reflective listening calls. And then we use things like conference calls for things like I talked about, like, you know, having these conference calls over the new direction. But we've been using it for years now for conference calls to help people get set up with reflective listening buddies calls to have time to actually process as we would in a group at the monastery what's happening for what's coming up for them around their practice and around the reflective listening calls. And it's, you know, for me, you know, sort of like what I sort of do for the organization, it's always sort of like looking at, so, okay, here's a technology and it's neat, but, you know, how can we actually use it to support the practice and support the offering of practice rather than let's just do this technology?
Yes, yes, yes. And so it's really coming from what is true to this practice and what's going to assist us in waking up and ending suffering.
Right, right. And, and so we're, you know, and the thing that, one of the things I'm really excited about that we've started to talk about but we really haven't in place yet is like, well, how can we bring even more of sort of like that day-to-day support of practice into people's lives out in the world? And as that becomes clear and clearer to us, you know, this to me, the excitement really builds of like, well, how can I go through my day, every moment of my day, feeling like I'm, you know, my attention is on my practice, and I have the practice support to keep checking in along the way, you know, where am I, and am I, you know, is my attention right now on what I believe my intention is? And so, you know, the more that we're able to, you know, kind of like use technologies in a way that offers that kind of support, it just all seems like a big win.
Yes, yes. And I really like that phrase you just used. Is my attention focused where my intention is for it to be?
Yeah, yeah. So it's a good time, you know, to be able to support the practice in this way and to offer support to everyone. It's just really exciting to me.
It is really exciting. It is really exciting. And as you're pointing at, related to the recent emails about the new direction for finances for Living Compassion, it's exciting to know that some of those new technologies will be available for monthly donors.
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And this March 21st workshop, I think, is a great opportunity. It's for one, it's being offered by donation. There's no set price for it, so whatever it feels right to people at this time. And for anyone who's feeling a little adventurous, and we certainly are, it's a great opportunity to be doing practice wherever you are. And, you know, we're certainly, if anyone, you know, there's information on our website about it, and if anyone needs any help getting kind of set up to do it, you know, we're willing to assist in any way we can.
Great. Great. I'm looking forward to the big experiment.
Yeah, should be fun.
Great. Bob, thanks for joining us tonight.
All right. Thank you, Michael.
Okay. Good night. Good evening and welcome to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Good evening, Sherry.
Good evening, Michael.
How are you tonight?
I'm just so well.
Great.
If I were any happier, I just couldn't stand it. I'm quite sure I would have reached my happiness threshold, and I don't know what is beyond that. I've just... it's a gorgeous day where I am, and we're on retreat at the monastery, and we just did the most marvelous thing for me, anyway. We all, I don't know, there are 25 of us or something like that, and we all just went on this big walk out on the monastery property and visioning how we would see things, what we might like to do with that property and what we want to focus on next. And, you know, we're in this big, it's not a push. That's really not a good image. But what we're turning our attention to is making the monastery peace center more obviously a peace center. So, as you know, we've been doing sustainable practices since we bought the property. We've always been off the grid. Everything there is organic. It's a safe environment for critters and trees and all of that sort of thing. And it's a very peaceful environment because of that, because of the introspective work we do. And so we're looking at creating paths and trails that people can follow in little places that they can sit and meditate and maybe have a peace practice to do or something, a little quote to remind, you know, that getting your, I too love that phrase of Bob's, so that our attention is where our intention is.
Yeah.
And so that's been very fun. And, it's spring and life is good.
Yes. It's fun to hear you talk about that. The image I get as you're talking is deepening practice at the monastery,
mm-hmm.
and then tying it in with what Bob talked about, really sharing that and spreading
yes.
that.
Yes. Yeah. And in fact, one of the conversations that we were having on the walk, probably a lot of people listening in know about the little monk stories. And so people who have been at the monastery for a long time were sharing different stories that have happened, you know, the rattlesnake that fell in the valve box in the garden and what the monks went through to save the rattlesnake and return it to a better environment. I don't know for the rattlesnake, but for us. And those kinds of stories. And we were talking about doing some work to help people have an experience of how an environment like that works together, how all of the creatures who live there contribute to the overall well-being of the whole area, and that each one is essential. And that we, of course, we have 320 acres, so it's, you know, it's not a huge amount of land, but it's a good amount of land. And to make a safe place for everything to be naturally as it is. So we don't kill the rattlesnakes. We do encourage them to go live a little distance from us. We don't kill the black widows. We encourage them to better housing. We realize that everything there has a point and a purpose for being there. And so an attempt to live as peacefully, to coexist as peacefully as we can with all of the other natural creatures. We don't think of human beings as unnatural, although we can forget our naturalness and start living as if we don't actually belong on the earth, as if the earth has to be remodeled in some way to be acceptable for us to inhabit. But it's very fun. And looking at the new site, putting up the first step of the meditation hall, we've decided that we're going to do it in very small phases as we built the meditation hut, you know, a platform here and then perhaps a little roof there and then, slowly sneaking up on a building.
Uh-huh.
And like that. So it is. It's exciting times and it's great listening to you and Bob and realizing how much we're going to be able to increasingly include anyone who wants to participate in every aspect of this.
Yes, it's great.
In fact, Michael, one of the things, I think it was a conversation that you were in on, actually, where we were talking about eventually setting it up so that people, there will be a meditation group going on all the time. So
yes.
Somewhere in the world, somebody will be ringing the bells and reciting the daily recollection, and it will be possible for a person at any time to get up in the morning and find out where their meditation group is. And it may be on the other side of the world, but it's the right time for them to meditate, and you sit down and meditate with Sangha. And there's no reason that we can't have that essentially around the clock.
Yes, that would be really great.
Mm-hmm.
Sherry, I was thinking, as you were talking about the birds and the trees and insects being naturally as they are, it just reminded me that that's the fundamental there is nothing wrong with you work, that's what we're going for, is to see how is it that we are naturally.
Yes, that's such a good point.
And there's such a cloud of stuff to get through to get there.
Yeah. This about me shouldn't be here. This is the wrong way to be. All the internal rattlesnakes and mosquitoes and poison oak and all of those kinds of things that we have been taught to believe are wrong and annoying, and really we need to get rid of them in order to be all right. But instead, to realize how there are no mistakes in life. And so whatever is there for our benefit, which makes it there for the benefit of all. And how do we move to a point of realizing that?
Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
I just love practice.
Me too. It's great to be, as you know, one particular benefit for me is being involved with this radio show and being called to be as present as I can be every Tuesday at 5:00.
You know, Michael, that and of course at other times too, because there are other things that you do with the radio show that require you to be present. And we talked a little bit about that too, and we've been talking more about that, that the people who benefit most are the people who participate most. There's just, I mean, that's just across the board with all of life. And so if people want their practice deepened, then coming up with something that they can take responsibility for. And it's often helpful, you have to show up because, first of all, otherwise I'm going to be hanging around, you know, with nobody to talk to. and then all those people who are trying to call in, if I ever stop talking, or who listen to the archives, you know, they're not going to have a show. They're not going to have support for their practice if you don't show up.
Yeah.
And so that causes you to take your practice to a whole different level in order to make that happen. And that's the secret for all of us.
Yes.
Yeah.
Participation.
Yeah. Well, it's the reason that I do what I do with my life. I knew when I came out of the monastery where I trained that if I didn't have around the clock, 7-day-a-week support for practice, that I wouldn't do it. I wasn't deluded enough to think that I would somehow maintain it on my own. And so I just simply set up a life where I have to show up. You know, I don't have to, obviously, but I want to, and having a responsibility causes me to have that extra little push of willingness, whereas if it were just me for myself, I might be inclined to say, I'll do that later, I'll do that tomorrow. All of the procrastinating things that we all know human beings suffer from. But when we have things that we are required to show up for, we go beyond ego in order to do that, and we benefit, and everything benefits.
Yes, yes. And as you often point out, it's helpful to have other people involved when we're making those kind of commitments.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's Sangha. You know, again, the Buddha was a sharp fellow. And those are the three things that he felt were most important: awakening, the practice, and the people to do that with. So the Buddha said, get some other people to do it with. So,
yes.
Okay.
Jerry, we have several callers here.
All right.
First caller, you are now live on the air, and could you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Lisa from Seattle.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Jerry. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
What's going on in your world?
Oh, well, I'm in a room with the lights very much off at the moment.
Uh-huh.
So I know
that room.
Yeah. Well, I know it too, but it's so funny because every time it seems like I'm making some progress and I know there's not necessarily anywhere to go, but you know, I'm really in the practice and I'm doing it and I'm seeing that it works, and then I get slammed.
Uh-huh.
And I'm feeling very slammed right now, and I'm not sure if all this is going to be very coherent because I'm being told that I'm also very confused.
May I?
Yes.
Since we were just talking about Sangha, that's the beauty of it, isn't it? Because if you just stop somebody on the street and try to explain to them that you are stuck in a really dark room with all the lights off, and that you had been practicing really hard and felt like you were on track, and then you got slammed, they might go, "What are you talking about?" But because
yeah.
It's Sangha and because it's a practice that we all do, we can keep up with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. And I'm so appreciative of that and the ability to make this call, be able to talk about it. So a little bit of content is that this fall I started a new job that for me is really challenging. And it seemed that at the same time, or very shortly after that, and I know my husband's called about this too, but our six-year-old has just kind of spiraled out of control and has made our home life really, really difficult, really challenging. And it seems like whatever we try to help her isn't really helping. And
uh-huh.
At the same time, I have so much, just stress and, you know, a lot of things that I need to get done for this new job.
Uh-huh.
And I bring it all. I mean, I have to bring it home. It isn't the kind of thing that I can just go to work for a few hours and then that's it.
Uh-huh.
And I do bring it home because I have to. And I know that they're somehow connected. I'm pretty sure at least, but.
Let me see if I'm up with you, Lisa, after
yeah.
a big talk about how I can keep up with you. So are you saying that it feels not coincidental that this job that is so demanding and challenging for you that requires enough of you that you need to bring it home is having some effect on your daughter's behavior?
It seems that they are connected.
Uh-huh.
It seems
okay.
to me that it didn't really start right away. It didn't coincide with the same starting of the job, but I think it coincided with the newness of the job kind of wore off, and my excitement and oh, this is great wore off, and then it just became, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? The enormity
uh-huh.
of what I had decided to take on kind of just hit me. And
uh-huh.
I think those coincided,
uh-huh.
where my joy of the job was not there, but my struggle was
uh-huh.
there.
And,
so
and
I
you're
think,
suspecting that she is sensitive to that, and part of this may be a reaction to that.
Yes, I think so. And I'm running into not really knowing how to deal with that, short of quitting the job.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have tried doesn't seem to really be taking root yet. I mean, it's not really doing much. And then as soon as she goes into her process of flipping out over whatever it is that she's flipping out about, I go immediately into my process, which is,
and probably,
I can't handle this. I'm not a good mom. I
yeah.
can't do this. I'm not a good teacher. I can't do all this. I can't.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
I get stuck in that realm.
Yeah, and probably both of you in a very, very similar place.
I would guess. Yeah. It seems very awful for her too.
Yeah, yeah. And now I think when we talked about her before, her father and I talked about her.
Yes.
Have you guys tried any of that thing, like when you come home from the your various days, setting up something where you immediately process what's going on rather than waiting for the explosion?
Well, we tried to do...
Lisa, we're getting some real feedback from something.
Really? Is it
yeah, I don't
now?
Know if it's a microphone or if it's too close to the... I don't know what it is. Ooh, that got quiet.
Is that better?
Yeah, that
is better.
Yeah.
Okay, I just moved into a different room.
Okay, there's still kind of a fuzzy echo, but that might just be how it is. That's fine. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, we've tried to do the little meeting where we kind of debrief and talk about our day and how this went and how that went. And the kids really aren't being very receptive to it. It's like they don't want to talk. They're kind of bored. They make it silly. They just want to, you know, not even participate.
Uh-huh. Okay.
So
well.
We found that hard. I mean, we tried, and we found that we tried to do it right before bed, and maybe that's waiting too long.
No, no. Here, okay. We got another plan. Okay. Here's the
okay.
plan. All right. So, what time do you folks all get home?
Everybody is usually home by 6.
Okay, by 6. And then when does dinner happen?
Pretty much right then.
Okay.
I mean, well, see, I get home, and the kids get home, and then my husband gets home later. So by the time he gets home, it's usually time to, okay, let's have dinner.
Okay. So here's my suggestion, because I don't know if you know this, but most domestic difficulties happen in the time between people getting home and dinner.
That's my hardest time.
Yeah, there's all the stress of the day. It's, you know, everything is going on. People are tired. They're hungry. They're out of sorts. And then they get around the safe people, and everything comes apart.
Yep.
So here's my next thing to try. When the kids get when you and the kids get home, have hors d'oeuvres. That can be pretty simple, of course, peanut butter and carrots.
Yeah.
But,
well, we usually do, right? We usually do.
Yeah. Yeah. You have a little snack, and then do whatever. You know, you take advantage of that time to do whatever. When your husband gets home, if he needs a snack, that's great. If not, then the two of you sit down, and you process your day. Now, the kids can sit at the table with you or sit in the living room with you or wherever they are. They're required to sit there. They're not required to participate. But they listen to the two of you. And you really talk about, you know, oh, my gosh, you know, it just keeps piling on. And, you know, then this thing happened, and these people are, you know, all the stuff that festers in there until, you know, your daughter does what she does, and it all comes spilling out. Okay? So the two of you do that. And then here's the one that they will or will not just despise. Family dancing.
They'll love it.
Okay? You put on the music, and each person gets to pick the music. Okay? Each, you know, you can take turns picking the dance. You know, do those dance kinetic kind of things where well, the kids do this in Africa, too. You know, everybody does this. And so one person does that, and everybody has to dance the way they're dancing. And then the next one. Okay, and do that until everybody breaks a sweat and is laughing.
Okay.
All right? Because you want it to go on long enough that some of that energy is being dissipated. You know, it's just energy. It doesn't matter how it gets dissipated. And so my hope is that the kids, over time, if they're not required to talk, will. And even if they're being smart alecks, you know, if they're participating in some way and you can keep a sense of humor about it, that's great.
Yeah.
And then do the dancing thing and see if you can dissipate some of that energy and see how it begins to affect the rest of the evening. Because late at night, no, it has to be early. It has to be in that transition period. That's why we encourage people, if they're going to meditate in the evening, don't wait until bedtime to meditate. Meditate to make the transition between the day and the evening.
And the evening.
Yeah. Okay? So give that a shot, okay. And then let us know, and we'll come up with the next plan.
Okay. I will. We'll try that. We'll try that tonight. That time is coming up soon.
And the thing about it is for the working mom, you use some of the techniques that you know for her. Okay, get out that reassurance tape for her. Journal the five things that she most needs to know about who and how she is. Give her some support.
Okay.
Yeah, even if she feels like she's in a dark room. She feels like she's in a dark room because she feels like she's all alone with these overwhelming life issues. So if you can start giving her some support, I think she's going to start feeling a little lighter.
Okay.
All right?
Okay. We'll try that. Okay,
right.
Thank you very much, Sherry. Thanks, Michael. Bye.
You're
welcome.
Thanks for joining us, Lisa. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, the thing I love about practice and listening to you work with people is I project you really tuning into exactly what's going on in the moment, and I would never have guessed dancing.
Yeah. Anything that'll move that energy around. So, just who are the players? Well, what are they all going to have in common, you know?
Yes.
It's not a good time for baseball, or it's not a, inline skating might not, but by golly, everybody can dance.
Anywhere, anytime.
Anywhere, anytime, yeah. I think dancing is one of the best parenting techniques ever.
Right.
Whatever is going on, anytime anybody starts to freak out, just start dancing.
Great, I'm going to take that one on.
Good. I bet those little guys be excellent dancers.
They are.
Yeah.
Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
All right.
The Zen Blues Quartet is a collaborative music project celebrating life and the music of the blues. Good musicians and good friends coming together to make something really beautiful simply because we can. Zen Blues Music. For myself, as a Zen student, I see a direct connection between playing the blues and awareness practice, because for me, both seem to require a willingness to be really present in the moment. Zen Blues Quartet is proud to sponsor Open Air Talk Radio with Sherry Huber, as we firmly believe that the quality of your life is dependent on the focus of your attention. www.zenbluesmusic.com for more information about our project.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have some more callers.
Practicing playing music and parenting all require absolute in-the-moment presence, huh?
Uh-huh. Practicing playing music and parenting.
Yeah, I was just listening to... that it's true. I mean, especially the music those guys are playing. They're not playing from sheets of little things.
Yes.
Those little jobbies. They're just listening to what the other people are doing, and then they're, being in sync and feeling the energy, and then they're playing.
Yeah.
It is a very in the moment kind of thing. And boy, isn't parenting?
Yes. It is.
Yeah.
Great. Sherry, we
all
have
right,
some more
who
callers.
We got? All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Janet calling from New Hampshire.
Hey, Janet.
Hi.
You have any snow?
Yes.
I bet.
We just had another snowstorm yesterday.
Good for you.
So it's still here.
What's
pretty
going
unbelievable.
On besides, what's going on besides snow?
Well, I've found everything that's been happening lately with the invitation to join in and, kind of think about where I am, where I want to be, what I want to be doing, how much I want to participate has been a really interesting process. And I just wanted to call up and say something about that.
All right.
And I really enjoyed you and Michael talking before, you know, when you were you know, talking about, you know, the participating more and, you know, how that takes your practice to a whole different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it just keeps coming up for me, like when you first sent the emails out and I started thinking about it, and to where it keeps progressing every day. It's like it started at one place, but it seems like it keeps percolating.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying?
So I do.
What I was thinking about in the beginning, you know, it's interesting because as I was on the phone, I was thinking it's sort of like when I teach yoga. And it's like the posture you get into right away is not the posture that you end up in. You keep moving deeper and deeper.
Yes.
And that's what it feels like to me, because every day it's like something else comes up and I hear something and I'm like, well, where am I here? And I keep changing, and it's only been a couple of weeks. But
yes.
It keeps reappearing and I keep looking at it.
Yeah, so somebody in the retreat that we're currently doing, it was looking at a question of, what am I doing here, and what am I going to get out of this, and where is this leading? And you know, there's a lot that kind of questioning that we get into, and then had the realization that, this is it, this is the practice. So that questioning, that deepening that you're doing, the continuing to look and finding yourself in different places, that is the practice.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's been invaluable, because it has really brought to the forefront how this practice is so big in my life. I mean, it's what I want this practice to be, you know, out there. Like, this is my practice, and then my life comes from that.
Yes.
Or I lead my, I don't know how, what the words are, but I lead my life from what my intention is with this practice.
Yes, well, there was a couple of days ago, there was a quote from Mahatma Gandhi in Transform Your Life, and I think it was, my life is my message.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So what is your message for us, Mahatma?
Mm-hmm.
My life, my practice, everything
yeah.
I do. It's not that I live one way and then talk about something else. You can, I don't know where this comes from, but I think I've heard the money people around the practice say, might be Lynn Twist, in fact, you know, that you can look at your checkbook and know what your values are.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah.
It's that same kind of, there is no difference between what I do and who I am. And is what I do reflecting the who I am that I want to be?
My God, I'm so glad this is being recorded.
Me too. I'm not sure that
yeah.
that even made sense, but perhaps between us we can figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I, you know, on that, I wanted to say that the support calls,
uh-huh.
you know, I got on one of the support calls and then I listened to the other three, and I
uh-huh.
found them to be really invaluable in just keeping me moving through, you know, looking at this. And one of the things that was funny, because the reason I got on the call tonight was because when I got on, I saw there was only one other person in front of me. And I was like,
uh-huh.
oh, I can get on the call tonight, so I'm going to call. And then I was like, well, what am I going to talk about? So it was interesting because I called, and then, you know, as I'm waiting, I'm thinking, okay, what do I want to talk about? And one of the things that, you know, came up to me was the fact that I have been thinking about for a while about doing a sitting group. And
uh-huh.
this has really come up full force, because you know the little things you've had us sign up for, say, you know, for ideas for
mm-hmm.
fundraisers or whatever, you know,
mm-hmm.
I've been sending a bunch of those in, and one of the things that keeps coming up and is, you know, well, I want to get more involved in that way. I really want to do a sitting group, and I keep getting stopped. And the stopping uh-huh. place is, well, there's no, what night would I do? Or what day would I do? Or when am I going to do it? I mean, it's like,
but what
really,
will I wear?
Yeah, and who will come? And what are they going to think about sitting looking at the wall when a lot of people practice around this area the other way, not facing the wall? And you know, it's like every little step of the way, there's like a little block. And when I was listening, I knew I wanted to just put that out there. And when I was listening to you and Michael talking, it was like, that's the whole thing. You know, I want a time, because when I do my reflective listening call, I'm always there. I mean, it's like I work my schedule around it.
Yes.
You know, that's in my schedule. And I depend on that I know I'm going to show up for that, you know, unless something
yep.
really happens.
Yep.
Otherwise.
And
so I
and
know
who,
the
and
power
who will,
of that.
Yeah. And who will show up for your sitting group? You will.
Yeah. That's good.
You will. And you're the one that you know really needs it.
Yeah.
So if somebody
and
else
I'm the one that I want to
up,
do it for.
That's right. If somebody else
because
shows
I
up,
want to show up and have that time.
That's right.
And know
anybody
that I'm
else,
showing up. Yeah. Yeah.
Anybody else is icing on the cake.
That's good. I'm glad I called and said that.
Me too. Me too. Because I can promise you, again, Sangha, you know, you're not the only one having these kinds of thoughts. And so it's good that you put them out, because then in that way that you listen to those calls and it moves you through different places in you and to new places to look, other people listen to you process this and the same thing happens with them.
Yeah.
That's all very helpful.
Yeah, I do get that.
Mm-hmm. All right, we'll keep posted.
Well, that's it, and that was really good, and I'm really glad I called.
I am too. So let's talk again.
Okay.
No, I'm serious, though. You know, you've sent this in, so
I haven't sent this in yet. I'm going
okay.
to.
All right.
I'm moving on it. Okay.
Yeah. All right.
It's
good.
A done deal now.
It's done. It's
okay.
a contract. All right. Thanks, Janet.
Thank you, Sherry. Good night.
Good night,
Michael.
Good night, Janet. Thanks for joining us, Janet. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, it's fun for me, as we're talking tonight, the emails came out about the finances, and really what's being pointed at, it seems like, is participation.
Yes. Yes. And hopefully, of course, that's, well, I think Janet was kind of saying this too about practice. Hopefully this participation in the way that we're talking about it will happen for people everywhere all the time. So one of the big things that we're focusing on right now is the garden, and our dream is to have enough growing in there that we can feed ourselves and we can share with others who don't, for whatever reason, don't have the ability to grow a garden. And so it's that kind of participation in Sangha. And that's, yes, the people that we meditate with. But Sangha, you know, we don't say, I've never been supportive of the phrase Sangha member, because Sangha, who is Sangha? Sangha is everybody who practices. And they don't even have to practice with us. They don't even have to practice what we're practicing. It's people practicing. So it's everyone who, in whatever way, is trying to awaken and in suffering. Everybody who's trying to go beyond an egocentric life into a larger life, a larger conscious awareness. Everybody who's trying to move into kindness. Everybody who's trying to practice peace. So, more of that. We can use more of that everywhere.
Yes.
Lots of participation. Schools are having trouble. Go volunteer at the school. You know, whatever it is. Cities don't have money. Pick up trash. You know, there's always a way that we can participate wherever we are all day long.
Yes. And as you're talking, I'm thinking that as we focus on that, whatever it is that our practice is or whatever we call it, we're really each of us going around in the world making a contribution in a way that's helpful.
Yes. Yes. If nothing else, the fact that we are there and we are present and we are kind, that's a huge contribution.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is.
And then if we do something on top of that, well, my goodness.
Yes. Sherry, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be right back.
Right.
Porchdog Software is proud to support Open Air with Sherry Huber. For more years than we care to mention, Porchdog has been writing Windows and Mac software for customers big and small. We're pretty good at what we do, and we always try to remember that what we're doing is never more important than how we're doing it. Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, we have two more callers there.
All right.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello, this is Raquel from Virginia.
Good evening.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm so glad to be able to talk to you about this. I am a loyal fan of the show, and so thankful that it's here. My question is about suffering. And what I've noticed for the longest time, my story was that the reason that my life is the way it is because I have obsessive compulsive disorder, and how bad the anxiety is, and so forth. But what I've come to see is that, yes, that's there, but behind that is really an addiction to suffering, because I know what I have to do to heal, either take medication or use various tools, and I just don't do that. And so I've done the There's Nothing Wrong With You retreat, and so this is why I wanted to talk to you and get some guidance, because a lot of my times when I'm not at work, I spend the whole day maybe in bed. I just don't have the energy there's just no energy to want to do anything. And so I try not to beat myself up and say, okay, there's nothing wrong here if I just want to be in bed all day. But then, you know, the voices do beat me up because I just feel I'm being selfish and I'm wasting my life away and not contributing and so forth. And, you know, when I've listened to past shows, you know, what you've talked about is, you know, if you have some moment of clarity to just to slowly work towards that and to use the tools and so forth, but there is such resistance,
Well, first of all, congratulations for realizing what's going on, because that it takes a huge amount of willingness and awareness to frame it the way you have. You know, you're not pretending that you don't know that that the way out of this is within your ability. Okay? That what you're dealing with is ego's addiction to suffering. And so far, Okay, so you recognize that, which is you get how big that is.
Yeah, because for many, I'm 45, and for the longest time, I just kept looking for ways to heal myself with the OCD. But I finally, past few years, realized no, that might be there, but behind that is this addiction to suffering and not wanting to live life.
Yeah, yeah. So that's big. That you know, it would be if there were a should, you should have a party for the person who realizes that. And has that kind of clarity. Because as long as a person is in a victim stance, it's really pretty impossible to do anything about it. But as soon as you realize what's going on and sort of who the players are, now you have a chance to make a difference. So is it easy? Oh, God, no. You know, no, it's not. It's a huge uphill battle. However, as soon as you – now, let me digress here for a moment. When you did There's Nothing Wrong With You, did you find somebody there, any folks hanging around in your skin that you like?
Yes. There are parts of me that I like very few. But, yeah, there are some characters there that are acceptable.
Some kind of sweet – maybe young folks?
Right.
Uh-huh.
Yep.
So let me ask you this. When you were a little girl, what did you like to do?
I was very, very shy. And
uh-huh.
Oof, what did I like to do?
What did you like to play?
Immediately... I start beating myself up because I'm
to use different language? No, you're not. You're not beating yourself up. Self-hate is beating you up.
Right.
Self-hate is beating you up because you are going up against it. So here's the thing. Now, listen to this later or whatever, or maybe you can remember it, but write it on the wall if you have to, okay? You only get beaten when you're doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So even the you lie in bed and you don't give yourself a hard time for that. Okay? That's a very good thing. And so you get a beating because of that. All right? So you try to look at something that's going to help you into a different, better place. You're going to get a beating. You try to have sympathy or understanding for a part of you, you're going to get a beating. Okay? If you go into the kitchen and you open the refrigerator and start on the top shelf and eat everything in the refrigerator until you get to the bottom shelf, okay, the only time you're going to hear from self-hate is afterwards if you don't feel bad. You with me?
You're right. Yep, I'm following.
Okay. All right. So just to be clear about that, yes, those voices of self-hate are going to be there. They are not you. They are not going to quit trying to control your life, and they're only there to keep you from enjoying yourself. All right?
But that it's what the voices say is because I say, okay, there's nothing wrong, and there's nothing that I have to do with my life if I don't want to. And if I choose, because that self-hate is so strong and has such a pull on me, but I just think, how can I waste my life when there's so much to be done in this world? And I, except for the voices, I'm not ill physically. I'm blessed.
Yes, and part of what you are blessed with is an overabundance of self-hatred.
Yes.
So the same thing that is ruining your life is beating you up for having a ruined life. Yeah? Can you see that?
Yeah, so the same thing that's beating me
up. Ruining your life.
Yeah, ruining my life is, yeah.
Beats you up because your life is ruined.
Right.
Yeah, so it's like, it's almost like if, you know, if this were a recipe, we would say, okay, and now set that aside. Say you have all your dry mixes together. Now, set that aside because it really, setting aside self-hatred is essential. In that, it just has nothing to do with what's going on. You know, if you, you know, you have a crazed person with a baseball bat going around destroying your furniture, okay? And, which is a very good image for self-hatred, right? If you take that on, if you think that crazed lunatic is destroying your furniture because of something you're doing, you're really missing the point. Okay, the crazed lunatic is destroying the furniture because that's what the crazed lunatic does. Same with self-hatred. Are you with me?
Yeah. Yep, I am. And
all right. So now we're going to set all that aside because what those voices say to you, they say to you only to make you feel bad, to paralyze you, to keep you in bed all day because you're too depressed to get out, to make you anxious, so anxious that you're just miserable. Okay, all that's going on. We set that aside, okay?
Okay.
So when you were a little girl, what did you like to play? Did you like to color?
The self-hate was there as a small child, and I have memories of that. So I really have no memory, I think. One memory that just came up I remember is going with my dad and my brother, and we were going to another town to buy meat or something like that, and not a pleasant memory, but a lot of my self-hate was already very present in those young years.
Okay. And so then this is your first assignment, okay? Now, not that I think you're not just going to run into a bulldozer of self-hate about this, because I would really encourage you to expect that, okay? But for the, say, the next week, and we'll try to get you in the radio show next week, okay? So call early, right?
Okay.
For the next week, what I want you to do, and if you spend the weekend or your days off or whatever it is in bed, great. Be sure you have reassurance tapes that go all day long. Okay. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay. Did you hear that one? Reassurance tapes in bed with you? Okay.
Right.
So there you are. You're nice and comfy. You have your books. You have your whatever it is around you, and you have your reassurance tape, and at least once every half hour, you play a reassurance tape. Maybe you make a new tape, you know, whatever. But you're listening to a reassurance tape. And what you do is, have you ever done dominant, non-dominant hand journaling?
I have not.
Okay. Are you right-handed or left-handed?
Right-handed.
Okay. And so did you have a nickname that you liked when you were little? Did people call you something that is now not horrific to you?
No.
Okay, so I want you to think about what you would call that little girl. Okay. You know, whatever that is that you would call her. And if you're just open to it, it won't take you very long to figure out what you want to call her. It could be simple, you know, honey would work.
Yeah.
And so you take your pen in your right hand, and you say, will you talk to me? Then you put the pen in the left hand, and you just wait and let her answer you, okay? And you start a conversation that way. Now, before long, I want you to ask her, what do you like to do? And then let her answer. Now, you'll be sensitive to other forces coming in trying to ruin your good time, okay? Because they're always there, and that's always what they're trying to do. But all this is doing is establishing contact with that little girl, okay? Talking to her about her life, what she likes to do, what she likes to play, what she would like to talk to you about, and you are creating. So that bed becomes a safe place for the two of you to get together and have girl talk.
Okay.
Okay?
So I write with my left hand, you said, right?
She writes with your left hand, and you write with the right hand.
Okay.
Okay?
All right.
So okay. For the week. And then you're going to call me back next week and tell me what happened with you two gals.
Okay. All right.
All right? Now,
okay.
Again, I just want to say it one more time. Self-hate is going to try to destroy you.
Yeah.
And the best response to it is, this is the Zen response to self-hatred. Okay, you ready? You want to write this down, Steve?
Okay.
Whatever.
Okay.
All right, you got it? Because
I got it, sir.
All right. Yeah, you're a slug. You have no life. The condition of the world is all your fault. Okay.
Right.
Whatever. All right.
Yeah, because it's already very loud.
Of course.
Yeah, the self-hatred has been there since childhood, and yeah.
I to tell you the truth, two things really shocked me. One, that you made it to a retreat, and two, that you made it onto this show.
Well, because
so,
I've been doing therapy and workshops for pretty much my whole adult life,
they're working.
It's getting worse. Yeah, but it is. Slowly, it's all sinking in.
You're making progress. That's why the voices are getting louder. So this evening, do something celebratory for yourself, just to congratulate yourself for the work that you're doing and the headway that you're making. Okay?
Okay. Thank you. Thank you so much for your support. You just make such a difference.
Well, good. All right. I look forward to hearing from you.
I will call next week. Thank you very much.
Excellent. All right. Good night.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Raquel. You're listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Sherry, I love listening to you work with people, and what I get out of that is really an unconditionally kind focus and really attentive on supporting the authentic self there.
Well, you know, the thing that I have going for me after all these years of practice is that I am just not confused about who people are. You know, it's really hard when we're inside our conditioned reality to know, you know, is that center? What if the voice is really, you know? But I'm just not confused about that. And so looking at a person like that, looking at a life like that, you know, it's just so clear, isn't it, that there is nothing wrong with that person. And the struggle and suffering is because of all of this conditioning and self-hate that has been piled on to that authentic being. It's just really clear, isn't it?
It is really clear. And I can see in Raquel's call and in what you're saying, that really the opportunity, the challenge that I see is just finding the willingness to put it out there.
Yes. In spite of the fact that bulldozer of self-hatred is bearing down on you.
Yes.
That's exactly what it feels like. You know, you're going to die at any moment. You're going to be killed at any moment. And still to say, yeah, but I'm going to make an attempt to free myself if it's with my dying breath. And,
yes.
Of course, as soon as we get to that place, we're, you know, we really are home free. And it doesn't take us very long, actually, having those experiences of the suffering happens when I try to keep it inside and hide it and deal with it on my own and feel bad about it. And when I put it out, then there's support, there's relief, there's comfort. And hope in that. Pretty soon we go, okay, I'm gonna open my mouth here. I'm not gonna hide this stuff any longer. I'm not gonna protect self-hatred any longer.
Yes, Yes, and of course, when we do that, we're met with unconditional love and acceptance from the facilitator,
yes.
and we have
yep.
that experience over and over, and there's a trust and a faith that develops.
Yes, yeah, yep, yep. And the point, the original point that you're making, increasingly realizing who we really are.
Yes.
You know, at first, it's like, who am I authentically? Piece of garbage. That's who I am authentically, you know, and then we start practicing and we come back to that still place. We come back to compassion, to kindness, to gratitude. You know, it maybe it's a split second, but we're there. And then we find it again, and then gosh, it lasts for 2 seconds, and then we find it again, and we start recognizing it in other places. You know, we read a quote and we go, oh, I think that's it. And then pretty soon we're making a connection that, oh, it's out there, it's in here. Oh, wow, that's what they mean by projection. Oh, wow, so all that beauty that I'm seeing, oh, that's inside. Okay. And so we just keep finding a larger and larger place inside of ourselves that eventually we recognize as who we authentically are.
Wow.
Good deal, isn't it?
Wow, all in 1 hour.
In a split second, actually.
Sherry, we have one more caller, and we have a couple minutes left here.
All right, we're going to talk fast.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hey, Sherry, this is Beth.
Hey, Beth. How are you?
Well, till the end of the show. It's funny how it's whatever I'm looking at is whatever you're talking about.
Isn't that just the best?
Yeah, I had a question, though.
Okay. Lay it on.
I've been, okay. Well, it's not coming out.
No, I can hear that. I am clearly hearing the absence of a question coming out.
Yeah, okay, well, it's really doesn't. I mean, I want to ask it, but it's not coming out. It's just,
uh-huh.
It's right there, but I can't get it out.
I'm guessing then that it's a sort of a fifth chakra issue. It's stuck right there in your throat, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really clear what I want to ask.
Mm-hmm.
And I've opened my mouth 8 or 9 times now, and it won't come out. And
well,
I'm also conscious
start,
of the
start,
fact that there's only 2 to 3 minutes, and
yeah, let's start
maybe
small.
Next week.
Let's start small. What's
okay.
the first word?
Well, you know, it's like you're talking about how if you're not doing the right thing, self-hatred, you know, kind of stays quiet. And I'm kind of aware of that space of the miasmic, just this low-grade misery.
Yeah. Yeah, but it's
and
fine.
Which is different
than
this other place of just feeling like I'm under attack.
Yes. Yes. There you go. If we go along with conditioning, if we stay with the program, then there tends to be that low-level, low-grade misery. If we try to do something that's going to threaten conditioning, that's when the assault happens. So for the caller who spends the time in bed, unable to get up and without the energy to get up and do something, that is actually, I project, maintaining that low level of misery. You know, whatever it is. But
yeah.
It's familiar. It's not what she's going to get hit with when she puts her feet on the floor with an intention of getting up and doing something to take care of herself. That's when the attack is going to come.
It also seems I've had a visitor, and so I haven't been alone for about 3 or 4 days.
Oh.
And it's like I was alone for the first time this evening, and then boom, there it was.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. Now, yeah, now you wish you were alone, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, now you have the worst guest of all.
Yeah. That just won't shut up.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you going to, for the rest of your evening, are you going to try the Zen response?
Well, I have to admit that this is the end of the evening.
Yes, but you're not asleep yet.
Not yet, no.
Yeah, and so I would encourage you also to try the Zen master response of whatever. Listen to what the voice says. Uh-huh. Whatever.
Yeah.
Blah, 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 blah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Whatever. Channel your inner teenager.
Ha. The 13-year-old.
The 13-year-old. Blah, 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 blah. I can't hear you.
Yes. Again and yet again.
Yeah. Okay?
Thank you, Sherry.
All right. Call in earlier next time.
Okay.
All right. Good night.
Thank you for joining us, Beth. Beth, you've been listening to Open Air with Sherry Huber. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, Michael. That was fun.
It was fun. I'd like to thank all of our callers and all of our many listeners tonight.
Uh-huh.
And we'll talk
Good
next
night.
Week.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.